Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. Appreciate it very much. We're going to be talking with Chris Soleri of the Detroit Free Press in just a few moments. Chris, for years, has covered Michigan State football and basketball. So we'll get into it with Chris about Michigan State, where they are right now, what he's seeing. Final half hour, the homecoming weekend, the 99th homecoming football game for Penn State will be with Michigan State. And the homecoming parade is tomorrow. The Grand Marshal is Lisa Salters of ESPN. She will join us in the final half hour today. Tomorrow, DJ Dozier, scheduled to be on the show, joining us here in the Sunbury Motors studio. And the King will try to resurrect his 500 record on the pick segment tomorrow as well. Great to have you with us on the show today. And time now for our play-by-play call of the day. John Walton, fresh off the Stanley Cup win, gets to call another Caps Vegas Golden Knights game.
Right side to Kuznetsov with 5 minutes gone here. Back door for Backstrom. He scores! From the right side, Kuznetsov on a string, feeding Backstrom, and it's 3-1 Washington!
Caps won it 5-2 last night, and the Caps are off to a great start in this early season. All right, Chris Soleri, Detroit Free Press. He's covered Michigan State football and basketball for years. Whenever I want to know what's going on, I turn to Chris, who's Western Pennsylvania's own, by the way. Hello, Chris. Great to have you with us.
You know, I always expect to come into some sort of Pennsylvania thing and hear about a quarterback. And it's good to hear about Beaver Falls' own Joe Namath. Takes me back to the Western Pennsylvania roots and the cradle of quarterbacks.
And it is the cradle. It's amazing the number of incredible quarterbacks that have come out of there. All right, Chris, we got to get to the L.J. Scott thing. This is your story today from the Detroit Free Press. He's had motor vehicle problems before, among other issues, and now he's back at it again.
Yeah, and, you know, it's another one of those unfortunate situations that, you know, outside of the – in a vacuum in and of itself, it's not much. It's when you look at the pattern situation that, you know, here's a guy that last year got arrested because he was driving on a suspended license, took care of everything, and had a six-month basically probationary period where he wasn't allowed to get into any trouble. That expired in May, and then here a couple weeks ago, he injured his ankle on September 8th at Arizona State, hasn't played since. He played only two plays in the second half of that game, and then again, after the Central Michigan game, he sits out. He's been dressing for warm-ups but not playing because Mark D'Antonio said it's his choice. He doesn't feel healthy. He doesn't feel like he can make cuts. But after the Central Michigan game on the 29th of September, he was out driving, made an improper turn, and they found that he didn't have proper insurance, didn't have proof of insurance, and also did not have valid license plate. So a lot of moving parts there. But it's one thing on top of another, and you know, this is a team that right now is trying to demand more from its leaders, and Scott was brought to Chicago for Big Ten Media Day as being talked about as potentially being one of those leaders. And, you know, his season if right now up to this point has only been six quarters of football and six quarters of very ineffective football.
In fact, I think last year when something like this came up, not the exact same offenses, but he was not only stayed with the team, but they played Indiana. They held him out the first series, then they played the game. So that's how it was handled a year ago. How it's handled this time obviously remains to be seen. All right. So is everything boiling down to injuries with this team as to why there are certain areas that are not to the usual Michigan State standard?
I think to a certain extent. I think everything starts with injuries and everything is compounded by injuries. But, I mean, the first game of the year, they're without starting left tackle Cole Chunes, which all of a sudden disrupts the offensive line you expected to have coming back. I mean, that's a guy that started 16 straight games at left tackle, most important position on that line. So you start flipping guys around. Luke Campbell moves over to left tackle from right tackle. You put Jordan Reed in at right tackle. You got a new center in Tyler Higbee. So a lot of moving parts at that point. They struggled to run the ball in that game. Campbell struggled at left tackle. They eventually have moved him to guard now. They moved Tyler Higbee out of center because he struggled. Brought in sophomore Matt Allen, one of the same three Allen brothers.
Right.
So, I mean, they've shuffled guys around. Guys have gotten hurt. Campbell was hurt. Chewins was hurt. He's finally almost healthy. Then they lose David Beadle, who's their only senior. I mean, that's the thing, is you're talking about a young group. I mean, there's David Beadle, Cole Chewins, Tyler Higbee are the only juniors and seniors. The rest are sophomores, redshirt freshmen. That's a lot of inexperience to lose the only few veterans you got, and then you can't get a push. And I think that there was a 4th-and-1 play last week against Northwestern, deep in Michigan State territory. They basically bring in 7 linemen because the one tight end is an offensive lineman. They can't get a push.
Yeah.
They can't get a push to get 1 yard, and that's not Michigan State football, and that's where everything starts and ends, is those injuries on the line and the struggles to run the ball.
How much more pressure is that put on Brian Lewerke to be a playmaker?
A ton, and I think that's some of those interceptions that you've seen are a result of that. I think, you know, that for sure the fumbles that he's had. He had 2 lost fumbles. Those were the case of trying to do a little bit too much. There's been a couple bad reads. There's been a couple bad breaks. Balls bouncing off his guys' hands, and you know, guys slipping and falling in routes. But there's been a couple that have been on the working, and he's admitted it. And you know, he knows that he needs to hold guys accountable, but also hold himself accountable. I think the big thing for this team, when they're struggling to run, they got to be able to open up Lewerke's legs a little bit more. That didn't sound good. They gotta let Lewerke use his legs a little more. Let's go that way. They gotta let Lewerke use his legs a little bit more in the run game. Maybe try and free some things up for the running backs. How's that? That's what happens when you get to a Wednesday of a busy week.
I feel like, you know, like in the movie Animal House, when Belushi's going and he said, no, he's on a roll. Okay, just let him go. He's on a roll.
I just used that yesterday.
He's on a roll. Let him go. Michigan State over the last 10 years has had 3 punters. What has Jake Hartbarger's loss meant? Because he is done for the year.
It is a big one, because I think in part you're seeing these drives fizzle out for Michigan State around midfield. You used to be able to use Hartbarger as a weapon. I mean, he kicked a 74-yarder, a career long, at Arizona State.
Yeah.
Then he gets one blocked in that game. First time he's ever had one blocked, and then he gets hurt, and he's done for the year. They're going to try and get a redshirt for him. He's a fifth-year senior. The new rules will be interesting to see how that plays out. But it is a big loss, because this is a guy who can. He had a cannon for a leg. I mean, it took him a couple years to find the touch to go with that cannon. But I do think that, you know, that they basically had an open tryout during their bye week, and one of them was Rocky Lombardi, the quarterback. They brought in a kid that was basically a preferred walk-on at Illinois and left Illinois just to be a student at Michigan State. So there are all these weird things that they've dealt with in the punting game. And I do think, though, that Tyler Hunt has kind of taken it a little bit better, and he's been able to place him inside the 20, but it's not the same as having a guy like Hartbarger.
Right, and there's no question. Defensively, they're giving up 33.8 yards per game rushing, and I think the rush attempt deals like 1.6, 1.7.
Yeah.
Why have they been able to do that? What's allowed them to do it? And then the follow-up is, how good has Joe Bocci been in the middle?
Bocci's been very good in the middle. I mean, side to side, he's been a big force, you know, coming down and run support. I think that defense starts with those 2 defensive tackles, though. I mean, really, the 4 of them. I mean, they've got Mike Panasiuk and Raekwon Williams are next-level players, and they've played now. This is their 3rd year together. They're dominant at the point of attack, and that's where everything, I think, starts with that run defense. They're still struggling to get home to the quarterback a little bit off the edge, and still trying to find some complementary players to Kenny Willekes. But Bocci and Willekes have been great. Those 2 in the middle have been great. It's where they've struggled are the pass coverage on the other 2 linebackers, on crossing routes and with running backs running wheel routes, and stuff that's kind of between, in that depth between the linebackers and safeties over the middle, where they're not getting the right depth, they're not in the right coverage point. That's where you're seeing. I mean, 122nd out of 129. You talk about this program being so good against the run, they're that bad against the pass.
You're right.
In terms of yards allowed.
Right. Yeah. 303. I think. Yeah. You're right. It's in that area there. over the years, anybody that's watched Michigan State football week in and week out has been very fortunate to see some great corner play. And because they've had great corner play, they play that quarters coverage and so forth. It's allowed essentially whomever the defensive coordinator happened to be at the time to turn the other nine loose. They're not pressuring as often as before. 40% last year, only 30% plays pressured this year. They had to do that because of the kind of coverage and secondary they have right now.
I think it's actually the other way around. I think the coverage of the secondary kind of had to back off a little bit because they're not getting the pressure. And I think that's
okay.
You know, you saw those two basically four-star guys that they lost in Austin Robertson and Josh King to sexual assault cases,
right,
and removal from the team. I mean, those two guys right now would be juniors and dominant forces at defensive end. So now you've got a former walk-on in Kenny Willekes, who has been playing outstanding football. I mean, he's played 2 years of outstanding football, way above his head. And they're trying to between Jacob Panasiuk and Jack Camper and Dylan Alexander, trying to still find that second piece off the edge. They're not deep at defensive end. I think that's where you're seeing that, and I think they've kind of backed off a little bit. And I think the other thing too is that trying to jam the man at the line of scrimmage right now with the way teams, you got to give up something. And
right,
they don't want to get beat deep, so they're trying to give up. That's why you're seeing those underneath routes. That's why you're seeing maybe the crossing routes that get away from linebackers, get away from the safeties. They're playing it in front of them. I mean, they don't give up a lot of big pass plays, other than, you know, there were a couple of them that were either trick plays or a couple really nice passes the last couple of weeks between Arizona State and Indiana with a check at the line. They do have those mental lapses, but like in terms of pure coverage, I think Justin Lane is right there with some of the best that they've had.
Right.
They don't have Josiah Scott, too, and I think that's the other thing.
That's a huge – that's a huge loss right there.
Yeah, freshman All-American last year, a true freshman.
Yep.
And, you know, he hasn't played. I don't know exactly where his timetable is. D'Antonio gave an update that he did have meniscus surgery during camp, preseason camp. So, you know, he may be still a few more weeks away. They may even, just because he hasn't used the red shirt, try and, because it's a lost season at this point, unless some magical things happen in the next couple of weeks that just don't be happening. They may petition and just go and use the red shirt now and bring him back for however many years after that. But I think Josh Butler's been playing well, though, in his place. But then Josh Butler's been banged up the last couple of weeks, and now you're starting to see the depth getting tested a little bit.
Back to offense for a moment. Obviously, Felton Davis continues to be really good. They got Daryl Stewart back, but no Cody White. What has the domino effect been of the injuries at that spot, especially to White?
You know, it's interesting. White has been, if you look at Lewerke's numbers, his numbers yardage-wise and yards per attempt and yards per completion are better this year than they were a year ago,
right,
in part because he developed that downfield rapport with Cody White. He's been there. He's been the guy that they wanted to stretch the field this year. That was one of their big things. They weren't able to do that last year. I think Lewerke's been a lot better on deep balls to White. I mean, they've found a rhythm with those two. But then now you take him out of the equation for a couple weeks with a broken hand. I still think they're deep. I think, you know, obviously Felton Davis, it's 6'4", and you saw the speed on that jet sweep that he ran. He's got next level skills. Stewart wasn't 100% last week. I don't know where he's going to be with his ankle. He kind of gutted through it. And they're deep at wide receiver. It's not, I don't think it's as big a deal. And maybe in the block, I think you maybe lose a little in the blocking because Cody White was an excellent blocker. And that offense needs all the blocking at all the positions it needs.
It can't,
especially
can't,
there and at tight end. I mean, tight end, they've been absolutely absent.
Right, and that's something that's been a strength of Michigan State under Mark D'Antoni, is they've always had quality dual-threat tight ends as blockers and receivers.
Yes, and right now, I mean, they've got Matt Sokol, who's a senior who had some drop passes, fell down at the one-yard line. Some bad luck on them. I mean, he's a guy that's been around for a while. And then, you know, they're trying to bring in Matt Dotson, who's a second-year sophomore. They've had an injury to a guy, Noah Davis. They've had a couple guys here and there. And obviously, Jack Camper was a guy they brought in as a tight end and had to flip him over defensive end.
Right.
That's a position to really keep an eye on the next few years, but I don't know if there's a quick fix at that spot.
And Cam Chambers at wideout stepped up. He had a career-high 82 yards last week with five catches against Northwestern, so that helped them out. What's your thought? What's been your read on Penn State watching them from afar?
I think they've looked a lot better than they did at the beginning of the year. Because I've been able, I was able, just weirdness with the late games and everything else, I've been able to catch more Penn State maybe than any other team, just to kind of see the guys they lost and the key positions they lost. I think they've kind of started to build a lot more of a rhythm than they had in those early games. You're starting to see, you know, I was talking to offensive line coach Mark Staten today, and he said that he pointed out that those early games when Penn State wasn't able to stop the run, it wasn't that they were playing poorly. They were maybe a little bit out of position one way or another, and coaches have kind of rectified that. And I think that's where you start to see the defense. There were some games early on, and the Akron game, obviously, and you know, a couple of those other ones that, Pitt game even in the first half, and Pitt, you know, thought the guy who boxed all the snaps and fumbles.
Right.
That was a close game. And then, when they do turn it on, though, it's a juggernaut. I mean, you've seen the potential there. And I've been really impressed with KJ Hamler, a guy from up here in Michigan, has looked outstanding. And Miles Sanders looked great. They're different when they unleash McSorley like that to make him just as good of a running threat. So I think it's going to be a big challenge for this Michigan State team at this point in the season with all their problems that they're enduring to stop Penn State.
Chris, look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Absolutely, Steve. Looking forward to it. On my way there tomorrow, I'll drive into the beautiful Butler sometime at night, and then I will head over to State College.
Butler's very close to the cradle of quarterbacks.
It is. We had a few there ourselves.
Yes, you have. Hey, Chris, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you.
Chris Soleri, Detroit Free Press. Next half hour, Lisa Salters, ESPN, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Penn State Saturday against Michigan State at 3:30, 2 o'clock the kickoff. Next week at Indiana, 3:30 this kickoff and 2 o'clock the airtime. Morgan Ellison, by the way, has until, I think, tomorrow to appeal. The Indiana, he had been accused of being involved in a sexual assault. He led the team in rushing last year with over 700 yards. They suspended him today for 2.5 years from the university. They suspended him for 2.5 years, not 2.5 games, not 2.5 weeks, 2.5 years. Now, he has the right to appeal it. We don't know whether he's appealing it or not, but that is at least just a side note considering Penn State plays at Indiana next week. Quintez Cephas, who's currently on suspension at Wisconsin, is actually suing Wisconsin over the suspension. So now we'll see how that plays out. We would give you the kickoff time for Iowa despite internal demands, but they haven't provided that one yet. And there have been internal demands. What we're supposed to guess, what we're supposed to do on that one.
What are we, Kreskin?
Yeah.
Sis boom ba. Sound of an exploding sheep.
Karnak, Kreskin, Karnak.
You are correct, my friend. All right. Final half hour, Lisa Salters of ESPN. She'll be involved on the broadcast Monday night between the Packers and the Niners at Lambeau. But between now and then, she is currently driving to State College because she will be the Grand Marshal of Penn State's homecoming parade tomorrow. We'll talk with Lisa Salters in the final half hour of today's show. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. DJ Dozier on the show tomorrow. Homecoming weekend, the 99th homecoming football game at Beaver Stadium for Penn State and Michigan State squaring off. And the monstrosity known as the Land-Grant Trophy will be available. I've always felt strongly that the team that loses the game should keep it. You know how much, you know what? You know I really don't get all geared up on in-season trophy games. Really? I mean, postseason, yeah, you win the Big Ten Championship Trophy. You win the Fiesta Bowl Trophy. Yeah, that's different. But we're going to play for the Victory Bell. Do you even know which teams play for the Victory Bell? Huh? Anybody know? Okay, it's Minnesota. You get this Land Grant Trophy. Have you seen, ever seen that thing? It takes literally, I'm not joking. This is not, I'm not kidding around. It takes four people to lift it. Oh, well, look. They just need to win the game. Just need to win the game. It's going to be an interesting matchup because of how great they've been against the run, 33.8 yards. Penn State's been great running the ball this year. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. All right, the homecoming parade gets things rolling tomorrow night. It will start at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening near the IM building, then eventually work its way to downtown State College and then back up to the campus to finish. The Grand Marshal, and they'll tell you it was an easy choice, and it should have been, is Lisa Salters. She's on the road and joins us on her way to State College. Lisa, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm actually driving up to State College now. Good to be coming home.
All right. Yeah, coming home indeed. You come out of Baltimore and you come here. What drove you here? I mean, you know, because you walked on to the Lady Lion basketball team. So what actually steered you and said, I want to go to Penn State, then want to open the door to playing basketball here?
It was really pretty simple. I'm from King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and Penn State, Virginia. There were a few schools that I went to visit, and my visit to Penn State was a really good one. It was, I remember it was kind of cold and rainy, and that turned me off a little bit. but I really just had a great time, loved the campus, loved the people, and, you know, I just thought it would be a good fit.
Then you ended up playing basketball here. What was that experience like? Because obviously Rainey passed away this year.
Yep, I went to her service back in August. Playing basketball was something that I thought I was done with once I, you know, graduated from high school. I didn't come from the kind of high school that, you know, that groomed players for, you know, college, any kind of college program. So, and it wasn't anything that I really thought about. I thought once I was done in high school, I'd be done and it's time to, you know, really focus on school. And, I found that once I got to Penn State and was, you know, in my classes and doing well, I wanted to play basketball still, so I would go to rec hall and I'd play pickup, and you know, several members of the Lady Lion team were there as well. This was, you know, we're talking about August, September, before their, you know, their practice season really started, and they were like, why don't you try out for the team, you're good. And I did, and then I made it, and I was on the team for two seasons.
Yeah, you sure were. I've never really looked at, for example, you as a, quote, sideline reporter. I've always looked at you as a sideline analyst. I think you're part reporter, part analyst. What kind of preparation goes into what you do? For example, you got the 49ers and the Packers at Lambeau on Monday night. So it's one thing to sit there and say, okay, Joe, how do you go through and get ready for the game? Then you can ask Booger and you can ask Witten what they do. But what do you do to make sure that you're ready for the game so you can hit the right chords and ask the right questions?
Yeah, well, I make sure that I know all of the storylines. I think we all do the same thing in that regard. you know, we get a research packet about 40 to 50 pages each week.
Right.
So I always tell people it's like studying for an exam every week, and you do not want to fail the exam.
Right.
Because if you do, you're doing it on national television, and that's not a good look. So, you know, I'll have 20 pages, 25 pages on the 49ers, 25 pages on the Packers, which we get every Wednesday evening. So, you know, all last night I spent studying because we have a conference call on Thursday morning where we all get together as a group and talk about where we think the game is going to go, what kind of stories are going to be important, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you're right. There's a lot involved. There's a lot of preparation, a lot of study involved in doing a that we just, like, show up on Monday and do it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, you're up 6 days and only work one day. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't really work that way.
No, it doesn't even remotely work that way. Yet, what has it taken in your career to take those slices, be concise, and then get it back upstairs? What kind of?
I'm driving.
Yeah,
so I lost
I
you a little bit.
Oh, that's okay. No, I'll do it one more time.
I have you back.
I have you back now. That's perfect. What kind of discipline has it taken over the years, or to develop the discipline to get those slices, be concise, and then because you've got to get it back upstairs? She's driving. Yeah.
Wow, I'm so sorry.
No, don't be. That's okay.
I had you for a while. I heard what kind of discipline does it take?
It does it take to take those slices where you've got to be short segment, boom, send it back upstairs. What kind of discipline did you have to develop to do that?
Yeah, well, you know what? That is something, too. It's just like a skill that, like you said, you have to develop. That, you know, Joe and Witt, and Booger, they get all the time in the world. Their mic is always open.
Yes.
Mine is not. So I have to be short and succinct, and I have to get it done in 20 to 25 seconds. It's just something that you know, I've done now for a while. You just kind of got to keep working at it. I can kind of tell in my head, like a quarterback who drops back, I've got this internal clock in my head that I know how long I'm talking and when I have to, you know, get it back to the guys in the booth. I also am watching. Cardinal rule, you never want to talk over a snap. So, I can see when the quarterback's going up to the line, when he's starting to get under center, or he's starting to be back in the shotgun and calling out whatever. I know it's time to get it back up there. So it's just something that you work on, and hopefully I'm pretty good at it.
No, you're outstanding at it. That's why I asked it, because I think it's valuable for people to know. But you've also done a lot of work. Journalistic work on E60, outside the lines, going to Central Command and Cutter at one point. What have those segments been like, and how rewarding have they been to put them together and then see it come to fruition on TV?
Yeah, now that's a completely different muscle, because that's long form, and so I get to talk for, 30 minutes. So we get to do a piece that's sometimes 20, 25 minutes long. And those are, those are rewarding in a different way, because it allows you really to sit down with people. It could take us a year, 6 months to a year and a half, we could be working on a story. We could interview the subject 2, 3, 4 times in different locations, but that's really great, because you get to kind of sit down with people for a couple hours at a time, get to know them. So whether it's, Travis Kelce of the Chiefs, or it's Isaiah Austin, who I, just sat down with this past Friday. You might remember him from the 2014 draft. He went to Baylor. He was probably going to be a lottery pick. And then a few days before the draft, he's diagnosed with Marfan syndrome.
Right.
And, his NBA dream's over. So, just getting a chance to talk to him on what he's been doing since. He's actually playing basketball, by the way, in China.
Yeah.
Just talking to him, and what always strikes me is when people have such interesting and sensitive stories to tell, and many times they're difficult to tell, difficult to hear, but there are a lot of emotions involved. People cry. So I always feel that when someone is trusting their story to me, I consider it a great privilege that they are trusting me enough with their feelings to to, you know, the trusting that I'm going to do right by them, that I'm going to do my best and I'm going to tell their story the right way. So I'm always honored whenever someone sits down in the chair in front of me, that they're trusting me with their story, and I never take that for granted.
Have you ever thought about analyst work? For example, I mean, let's just start by saying the WNBA, because Doris Burke has done obviously work in the WNBA, college basketball, NBA. Have you thought about that? Because somebody who's, you know, you played the game, so have you ever thought about that, or is it something that never really entered your radar?
Not really. I mean, that's not my. I was trained as a reporter, as a
right.
journalist, so I was always about the storytelling. And the reporting, and so the X's and O's of it don't really interest me all that much. I understand it because, like I said, I've been around it enough. I played it. I get it. But I'm happy with the journalism part of it.
You talked about the rewarding stories, but you've also had to do some tough stories along the way. You've had to be the one that's had to cover Ray Carruth. You're the one that had to also help out and cover the Matthew Shepard murder. You had to cover the Oklahoma City bombing and O.J. Simpson and so forth. How tough are those, and also the part about having to think on the fly and make sure you've got it right because you're reporting that particular day or that particular hour on it?
They take their toll. That was one of the reasons why I finally let myself be persuaded to leave news, because I did news for the first 12 years of my career, and
right.
Like I said, I was with ABC. I did the Matthew Shepard story, the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, TWA Flight 800. Those kinds of really tough stories started to take their toll on me, and I kind of I would internalize everything, and so. You know, when someone is sitting in front of me and crying, they've lost their loved ones, and
yeah.
that it wouldn't be like I would just, okay, thanks, cameras stop rolling, and I go out and have dinner. Like, I would, you know, that would just stick with me, and it just started really to take its toll, and I felt like I needed a little bit of a change, and so I was happy to kind of give sports a try, and, you know, I'm glad that I did. But that's not to say that I haven't done some really difficult stories, sports-related
right.
stories as well. I have. So, you know, I didn't think of it at the time that sports could be as soul-crushing
yeah.
as news, but it can right. be at times. There are some really tough stories out there in the world of sports that I have been privileged to tell. But that was one of the reasons that I left news, is that it's for me, it's not just a job. I kind of take it personally to try to get invested and try to feel what the people I'm interviewing, what they're feeling.
Yeah, what did that training of having to go through that first part of your career or that stage of your career, how does that then help you tell the stories that you tell today, especially when it does get to emotion, because you've seen the pure emotion on the bad side as well?
Yeah, well, I think it's the same, honestly. The 12 years of doing news, to me, it's just like telling a news story is the same as telling a sports-related story. Because, early in my career at ESPN, you know, I might go to a game and cover a game and do the X's and O's, and this is why Kurt Warner and the Rams beat this team or whatever. But I don't do that. I haven't done that in
right.
many, many, many years.
Right.
So now I'm not just kind of an X's and O's covering the game person. I'm now more of a storyteller, whether it be storytelling on the sidelines for 25 seconds at a time with an injury report or a background on a player or something like that, or whether it's more extensive with E60. But to me, the storytelling is the same, whether it's news or sports. The principles are all the same.
And finally, I mean, you still have a lot more work to do. But when you take a moment and think back, and obviously everything's going to have twists and turns on it, what makes you happy every day to go to work and really drives you today to go to work and say, you know, I'm really fortunate I get to do, quote, this?
Well, I have a five-year-old now. I
yeah.
have a five-and-a-half-year-old.
Yeah, congratulations. So, I knew about that.
Thank you. And so I don't know if he really gets it now or not. He kind of just thinks it's cool to go and, you know, be on the sidelines sometimes and have players throw the ball to him and stuff like that. I don't know that he gets how unique of a situation that is, but I'd kind of like to do it long enough till maybe he's 10 or so and that he, you know, can really kind of appreciate it. But, you know, you're right. I absolutely love my job. I love doing what I do. And it's now that I'm kind of on the back nine of my career.
Don't. You're far from that.
I'm definitely on the back nine.
Okay.
But you kind of get an appreciation for, you don't think about it when you're 28. You know, or
right.
Even when you're 38.
Sure.
But, you know, now I'm thinking, you know, what do I appreciate about it? I appreciate the longevity. That's what I appreciate. That, you know, people come and go. You know this, Steve. People come and go in our business.
Yeah,
they're hot
do.
1 second, and they are gone the next.
Yes.
And you're like, what happened? I thought that was the flavor of the month, and now they're gone. They're like
right.
out of the industry, whatever. So, you know, to be able to say that I've been doing this for 30 years, even I'm really appreciative of that, and I don't take it for granted. I'd like to keep doing it for as long as they let me.
Yeah, were you talking about your son throwing the ball on the sideline? All right, I'll give you one quick story. Bill O'Brien, when he was here at Penn State, his son Michael, who's by the way, he's a left-hander, which makes him valuable in Little League, he's out throwing the ball in the field one day. Right, and somebody looks over at Michael and they said, "Hey, so did your dad teach you how to throw a ball?" He goes, "No, Tom Brady." Okay, so I mean, it's a true story.
Okay, yes.
Tom Brady.
Exactly.
That's
Tom Brady.
Yeah. Lisa, privilege as always. They couldn't have made a better choice this year. Enjoy it, and I know then you're eventually going to have to get to Green Bay. But thanks so much for the time you gave us today, and have a great time with us, and enjoy every second of it this weekend.
I sure will. Thank you.
Lisa Salters, ESPN. Graham Marshall, Penn State Homecoming Parade. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
Do new car prices scare you?
Then you haven't been to Sunbury Motors Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia takes the scariness out of new car shopping with 20 new 2018 Kias under 20 grand. They make it easy and affordable to own a new Kia. Choose from 2018 Kia Fortes, Souls, Rios, and Optimas. Kia is the home of America's best value. The 2019 Kia models will be rolling in, and Sunbury Motors Kia needs to move the 2018s now. All include Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. New car shopping? Don't be scared. Come to Sunbury Motors Kia and choose from 20 new 2018 Kias under 20 grand. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Golden Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotorskia.com.
Tax and tax extra. Offer expire 10/31/18. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Okay, so Penn State, Michigan State, Saturday, more in the game tomorrow. DJ Dozier is scheduled to be with us tomorrow here in the Sunbury Motors studio. And also the King tomorrow, who is right now agonizing at 16-16. And Sean, right, is in cruise control, hitting at a 75% clip. You're hitting at a 75% clip.
I'm blown away by this. It's still very early, and the King has not hit the dilly-dilly pit of misery level yet. So, I mean, there's still time for him to battle back into this thing.
He thinks he has. See, like, desperate moments, desperate times. He's like, okay. Now, this week's games, I think we're going to see some differences. There's going to be some separation this week, one way or the other. Because I think there are a lot of intriguing games that can go either way, and I think we'll see some picks that go in that same direction.
I chose Dallas-Jacksonville as one of our games. For some reason, maybe I should have chose a different one.
No, why? I think that's a game that can go either way.
Okay.
I think it's a game that can go either way. What if Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott show up and they play at a high level? Leonard Fournette's not going to play.
Yep.
So that's why it makes it intriguing. You put some games that appear on the surface to be 50-50 and you get some interesting results. And you got Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady in prime time. Not bad. Okay. Our thanks to Lisa Salters for joining us on the show today. Chris Soleri. And, of course, our high school roundtable, Zach Showers, Dick Hort, and Greg Wetzel on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.